Short disclaimer. This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 87 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander. So this is a special midweek episode of the Outlander podcast. We're still counting it in the numbers, but it's not following through with our normal state of affairs. There will be no announcements this episode. This is strictly nothing but fun content.
Yes, for this episode, we're sharing our interview with Jake Ferretti.
And maybe that name is not familiar, but I guarantee you, if you go back to episode 4, you would probably recognize him as one of the gentlemen in the hallway.
Who attacked Claire.
The very ones.
And I don't think he was one of the peers. Didn't we find that out he wasn't one of the peers?
You know, I don't remember actually asking him that.
Maybe we need to do a follow-up.
Maybe we need to call him back. I'm sorry. Which one of the attackers were you? Were you a peer or a not peer?
Without further ado, here is our interview with Mr. Jake Ferretti.
Who I'm hoping was not a peer.
So, Outlanders and listeners, hopefully one and the same, we have a very special guest today. We will be speaking with someone from production, an actor named Jake Ferretti. When was the first time we heard about Jake? It was from Agav, right?
It was from Agav.
And Agav gave him a shout-out. We let Jake know about the shout-out. And then I think we connected on Twitter, and we were, you know, thinking about the future of the show. And now that it's come to the UK, this is a great opportunity to be able to kind of highlight and showcase some of those actors who maybe don't get the Jamie status of the show. And this is an honor that we have him here. So let's see if he's connected. Mr. Ferretti, Jake.
Hello, how are you?
Hello there. We're doing very well. How's your day gone so far?
It's fine. It's very, very good, except the weather is possibly one of the wettest days of the year so far. It's not stopped raining all day. So that tradition of English weather being very, very bad is definitely maintaining today.
You're bringing it the way it's supposed to be brought.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, tradition of all sorts to the Skype call.
Exactly, and we're bringing the California tradition of drought.
Unbelievable.
So we should share weathers. Oh, we need some of your...
Yeah, give us some of your extra rain.
They definitely don't need drought, but we definitely need the rain.
Big time. Just a bit of heat and a bit of sun would be absolutely...
Oh, you can take it. Let's begin finding out everything we can about you.
Good.
So how did you begin in theater or in acting or television or whatever realm? When you were young or when you were maybe in your teens, how did you get into theater and acting?
So when I was in infant school, we call it here, which is kind of like, I guess, maybe like 5 and 6 year olds.
Kindergarten.
Right, kindergarten, right. So when I was in kindergarten, we had the school nativity play and they cast me as King Herod. And I think it was since then, you know, because I still remember vividly the costume they gave me. It was like this almost purple, like heavy velour kind of costume with this little round hat with like little tiny mirrors on it and like a bit of bling and everything. It was just ace. And I remember it, and I just remember thinking, this is really good, you know, and then kind of being on stage, people clapping at the end, and it was just brilliant. I just thought, you know, actually. I found my vocation at 5 or 6 years old, and I just loved it. And like, since then, I was kind of getting into drama classes when I was in my teenage years and, you know, doing drama at school and, you know, really, really, really enjoying it. And then I went, I think it was 2003, I went traveling for about 6 months to Australia, came back and, you know, kind of thought, you know, what am I doing? You know, do I really want to just be in the same place I've always grown up in, being in debt? And so I thought, actually, you know what, I'm just going to do it. I'm just going to apply to some drama schools and got invited to start like on the same day. Like, you know, I auditioned quite late in the year when drama schools do their auditions. And they said, you know, we really like you. we'd like to offer you a place, which is not normal. It doesn't normally happen. You kind of have to wait for a bit or whatever. And they offered it me straight away. That's my first time ever auditioning for drama schools. And they offered it me there and then. And so that's how I started. That's how I started with the acting.
Do you have any family influence? Were you around other actors?
No, I wish. That's what I mean. No, my dad is a welder, and my mum, she was working for a department store at one time, and now she's working in a state agency. But my brother quite likes, you know, the arts of sort of, like, he's a singer, you know, he plays the guitar. But as far as that goes, I mean, like, nobody else is kind of, you know, that kind of interested in the world of acting. So it's just kind of, it's just me. So where it's come from, I'm not entirely sure, but it was that costume. That's what did it. It's a thing on the hat.
So were your parents supportive of this? Because I know a lot of parents of artistic children don't always get it if they're not artistic themselves.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, they were. Yeah, I mean, because it wasn't something that I just decided to do quite randomly. You know, I've always kind of enjoyed it. And I think for them, it wasn't that much of a shock. But yeah, no, absolutely. You know, they live about an hour and a half away from London. So as often as they can, and when I'm in shows, they'll come up and see me and stuff. So yeah, they are. They're really, really supportive, which made it much easier, because I know what you mean. I know some people that have kind of said they want to do it. And, you know, I think, like you said, if you don't get it, then the whole reason of being an actor is quite foreign to somebody, particularly with the lack of unpaid work, you know, the irregular working patterns, not being able to go on holiday just in case your agent calls or something comes up. You know, it's such an unpredictable lifestyle that I know for some people, they're like, why wouldn't you just become like a vet or a doctor or something else? Do you know what I mean? We get paid regularly and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But they have been ace. They've been absolutely brilliant.
You mentioned auditioning for drama school. Mm. So you have had, and being offered a place. So you have had formal training. Can you speak to us about that, where you went, where you attended, and what that training was comprised of and how it affected you?
Okay, sure. So like I said, 2003, I applied to this drama school called Italia Conti, which has been going, one branch of it has been going for many, many years, you know, decades even. But this course that I did is still based in London. It's still part of the Italia Conti umbrella school, as you would call it, but it's just based solely on acting, whereas the other one is like musical theatre. So this is all musical acting based, and they based a lot of the acting style around Meisner and, you know, repetition and all that kind of stuff. And they did lots of movement stuff as well, like lots of movement work to heighten what you're doing as an actor. And, you know, obviously lots of voice stuff and, you know, how to support and maintain and improve your voice for all different styles of theatre, whether it be inside or outside. And it was interesting, actually, because I think had I an opportunity to kind of do it, or again, I probably would have done more, would have needed more of the acting side of it, because it was very heavily based on voice and movement, which was brilliant and a massive help. But I think, yeah, looking back, it probably would have been a bit better to do maybe a few more acting classes within it. But still, I mean, I left kind of feeling prepared and really excited about kind of getting into the world, because it did kind of teach you a bit about what the world is going to be like, you know, and I think that was really important, because I think whilst you're so excited and keen to kind of get out there and do stuff, you are a bit like a rabbit in the headlights when it hits you, because it's probably not what you're expecting it to be compared to watching a movie or going to the theatre or sitting down and watching Outlander for the first time. You know, I think you think it's cool and everything, but it's a difficult path, but I can't imagine doing anything else now. Absolutely nothing. There's nothing that else that interests me in the same way as acting does, you know.
What type of other theater, TV, film work, etc., have you had the opportunity to do?
So with TV and film, it's not been as much as theater, unfortunately, but I did work on The Other Boleyn Girl. I was one of the court dancers in one of the scenes in The Other Boleyn Girl. There's a BBC adaptation of Sense and Sensibility, which I did about 5 or 6 years ago in the same kind of thread, like as one of the dancers for one of their scenes. But it was Outlander, really. It was kind of my first biggest thing acting-wise I was doing in film and TV, which was great. But predominantly it has been theatre, like ever since I left drama school in 2007. So 2007 I left and went to Verona in Italy and worked on Romeo and Juliet, which was great because we did it like it was like a promenade piece. So we started in different parts of the city of Verona, which is just beautiful. And they have a big piazza there as well, which was amazing. So we did parts of the scene there and kind of moved around the city and everything. And then in 2008, we did a play by Alan Bennett, which went on tour for about 12 weeks. He's very well respected, arguably one of the best British playwrights ever. And we did one of his plays for about 12 weeks in 2008. And then it transferred to the West End in 2009. And then it went back on tour in 2010. And then I did a tour of Sherlock Holmes, which toured all over Italy. And my family is Italian, like my dad's from Northern Italy. So that was great. We kind of toured it all up and down and had the opportunity to see lots of different places, try lots of different foods and also perform at the same time. And then I worked for the National Theatre, which was outstanding. I mean, it was just incredible to be in that building. So I worked for the National there for a couple of months in 2011, I think it was. And then I did some like smaller regional theatre kind of stuff. And recently I was cast in The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime, which had its first transfer, its original transfer to the West End in 2013. Did that for about 6 months. I did a play last year at a regional theatre called the Southwark Playhouse in South London, which was, again, incredible. It's just a three-hander. But just wonderful, kind of actually taught me a lot about kind of holding an audience's attention and kind of being in control of that kind of thing, and leading the action so that people aren't actually bored, you know, by halfway through. And then that's kind of taken me up to now. Outlander, I think we filmed it in December, I think, a couple of years ago. So now finally it's come to the UK. It's a real treat to be able to kind of, see what's been done with it. So that's kind of me, right, in a bit of a 2-minute nutshell.
So you mentioned you did Romeo and Juliet in Italy?
Yeah, that's right.
That sounds amazing, first of all, with the promenade piece going from location to location. Now, was that in Italian?
No. So basically what they did was I think they have it every single year. Part of one of the tourist attractions is obviously based around Romeo and Juliet. So I think for 4 weeks, they have a week's worth of the same play, the same scenes within the play that they choose. And then the first week is in Italian, I think. The second is Spanish. The third is English. And the fourth is Italian again. But they choose kind of like key scenes throughout the play and put them all around the city. So I think obviously there's one of the tourist attractions in Verona is called Casa di Giulietta, which is Juliet's house. And there's a statue there, and there's a balcony there as well. So, you know, it's always packed, and the piazza is quite small, but it's always packed, full of tourists, you know, taking pictures of the statue and people, you know, in front of the statue and people gazing down lovingly from the balcony and everything. But there's a little courtyard, you know, beautiful, beautiful brickwork at the side, a great big massive wrought iron black gates right next to the balcony with like beautiful like vine leaves all kind of cascading down. So you kind of get the real sense of, you know, what it could have been like in those times. And they gave you lots of really ace costumes as well. So that was great. That was really interesting, actually, because, you know, it really kind of tests you how well you can speak and how well you can get across what you're trying to say in an outside setting, because obviously a lot of the time you're helped vocally by acoustics and all that kind of stuff in the inside of a theater, but trying to keep everybody's hoping everybody can still hear you was a challenge, but it was great. I mean, it's a beautiful city, really nicely done, and you know, I think it's about 4 or 5 different locations, and just beautiful. I mean, yeah, wonderful, wonderful piece to be a part of.
You mentioned the unique challenges, the unique situation of doing a piece basically working outside,
yeah,
or compared with working in the round or working in a small or intimate theater, and then, of course, compared with working on film. They're all completely different.
Yeah.
And, of course, the larger the space, the more support and projection and et cetera that is needed. So when you were training at school, did you have a lot of instruction on diaphragmatic breathing, posture, maybe something like the Alexander technique. What kinds of things did they help you out with projection and throwing your voice?
So all of those things. I mean, Alexander technique, we had one or two lessons every single week to kind of make sure that our posture was at its best. Because it obviously does make a difference. And, it telling us about how to warm up the voice, how to make sure it's ready for use, because to go in cold would be like, I guess, an athlete, running 100 meters without stretching. So it was very much based around, we didn't actually do anything outside, but they did say, working from the center, working from your core, making sure that the voice comes from somewhere strong, not, straining on the throat. It needs to come from somewhere like the diaphragm, that's somewhere really strong to actually make sure it carries across. Our voice teacher, Sarah, she would always say that, I'm not training you to project, because to project would suggest you're shouting or screaming, it's about support. So I always remember that whenever somebody says that, because people always said, oh, you're an actor, oh, so you know how to project, do you? And I'm like, no, it's supporting.
So then you know how to act, so it looks like you're projecting, or sounds like you're projecting.
Right, yeah, sure. But it was all based around, it was like the bigger generic things that come with that kind of thing, like support, but there were lots of more specific things, like if you're working somewhere that has more of an open space to it, you need to really be able to punctuate each and every vowel, each and every consonant as well. Because if people can't hear what you're saying, then the stories, I mean, they lose interest, they don't really care about the character. So, working with consonant placement and whilst supporting everything you do makes a huge difference. And, but also teaching us about how to make sure the voice is maintained whilst you're not working, not being too dehydrated before a show, not drinking anything that's too kind of dairy-based, not eating anything that's too dairy-based, like chocolate or milk or anything like that, because obviously it causes such a build-up of whatever around the throat that it will detract from what you're doing, so you need to be able to make sure you're completely hydrated, and warming up the voice beforehand is key for not just kind of understanding what the actors are saying, but also for longevity. I know lots of people that have done outdoor stuff like open air theatre for Shakespeare and stuff, and by 2 or 3 weeks in, because they're just not warmed up properly, their voice is really hoarse, and because they've just got to continue, they've just got to do it, it can become a real struggle. And then by the end of it, people are always saying, we didn't quite hear what that actor was saying, we didn't quite get it, and then it becomes completely fruitless, so it's important. It's a bit of a drag sometimes, because you kind of just want to get on stage and do it, but I mean, you have to be able to make sure your voice is at its best all times.
That's interesting. It makes perfect sense that, as my question was, do you see a difference, or were you trained? And depending on what the facility is or your environment, say if it's outdoors, my word was project. You correctly stated it's more support.
Yeah.
But it's not just getting people to hear you, as in can they physically hear you because you're voice is supported enough, but you bring up a very good point. It's also the larger the area, the more space you have to fill,
yeah,
the more important that diction becomes.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it's, I think people can get quite excited about, working. If somebody were to say it's going to be open air theatre, I think you'd get quite excited about it. But, if you really don't know, if you really don't know how to treat the open space, then it would just be a complete waste for everybody, because people won't be able to hear you, and you just won't be using your voice in the best way. But knowing all about it, knowing about working with consonant clusters, and preparing your voice for that, and loosening the tongue with tongue exercises, that kind of stuff, all of those kind of things, the more relaxed you are and the more confident you are, that makes for a better performance for everybody,
Absolutely. My interest in asking those types of questions is from the point of view of a trained classical singer. So I do understand,
sure,
having different spaces and the importance of support and diction. I find that fascinating.
Mm.
So how did you get to be involved with Outlander? Were you contacted? Did you audition? How did that come about?
So I'm very proactive as an actor. You know, I follow.
There you go.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I try to follow as many people as I possibly can on Twitter. And, you know, I like to find out exactly what everybody's doing and, you know, researching the play or the show that they're doing and seeing if there's a part for me in it. But this came apart quite randomly. And Simone Pereira-Hind, who is the one of the casting directors at the time, I think she still is now, she was on Twitter and I follow her. And she had tweeted something random one day and said, you know, we're still looking for Gaelic-speaking males for Outlander. And I'd like to feel that I can blag my way through many things. So I just tweeted her back, and I thought, well, why not? I'll just ask. So I said, do you have to be fluent in Scots Gaelic? And she's like, no, you just have to read from the script. And I was like, brilliant, I can do that. Yeah, that's something I can do. Definitely do. Never spoken a word like. I don't know. I mean, my mum made me learn it when I was younger, but not for very long. So I haven't spoken it for quite easily the best part of 25 years. But I was like, yeah, fine. Send it over. I can do it. So she said, great. Okay. Well, I'll send her the details to your agent, set up an audition. And then I actually got the audition and I was like, oh, I'm going to have to do it now. So I remember that. So I found out about it on the Thursday. On this random Thursday, and then I just was in a bit of a panic. So I then Googled London-based Gaelic teachers and luckily found this girl, Ailey, her name was. She was working in this private members club in Belgravia, which is an area of London. And so she said, yeah, fine, come over. Like, I can go through the scripts and, you know, learn from it and, you know, teach you how to say it and everything. And so took the sides to her, my audition sides, and the next day cycled over there, got her to record it, and then literally spent Friday afternoon, Friday night, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday morning before my auditions going through it. I mean, like, the sides only lasted about like a page and a half, but it was not the language I was expecting it to be, so it was really complicated. So I spent the entire weekend doing it, and then I thought, I'm as prepared as I'm ever going to be. So I went there, and Suzanne Smith is the London-based casting director. I think Suzanne and Simone are casting partners. So I was based in London at the time. I had the audition 10 days later. I think it was about 10 days later. They said, you know, we'd like to offer you the part of one of the Klansmen in episode 4. And I just couldn't believe it. I was like, brilliant, great, excellent. Scots Gaelic, that's going on my CV. Absolutely.
The side that you read from, was it part of the scene you actually ended up performing, or was it just like random Gaelic scene?
No, luckily it was the same one. I think there might have been one or two changes, but pretty much it was exactly the same one. But obviously when I got there, I had before I got there, I had the costume fitting and all that kind of stuff. And that's when I met Adam, he took me through it and was brilliant. I mean, like, he's just such a nice guy anyway. He's just really, really lovely. And took me through it, you know, consonant by consonant, step by step, and, you know, sent over voice clips on the email and everything just to make sure I absolutely got it down. And, you know, super duper helpful, really lovely. And, you know, I think it came across okay. I'm hoping on episode 4.
It was great. We're very biased. We're the best people and the worst people to ask about the show. There's nothing in it that we don't like. We notice and appreciate the changes, but as we always say, everything they've done or changed has added to, not subtracted from, the story. So it is, I guess you'd call us blind followers, but we're not blind. We're just very appreciative.
Right.
Yes. But no, 104 was brilliant. Seriously, that scene in the hallway with you and the other actors was so great, because it was, I mean, I don't know about, maybe not verbatim, but it was like straight from the books. It was pretty damn awesome.
Excellent. Thank you.
Of course. And you've already brought him up and mentioned him, but a certain Scottish friend of ours, Agav or Adam,
yeah,
we saw him earlier this week, and he when we told him that we were going to be speaking with you, he said, oh, you must say hello. So we give you a hello from Agav.
Oh, lovely. Well, that is so lovely.
He's always, when we were interviewing him and he first mentioned you, and then again this week when we mentioned we'd be speaking with you, he can't stop.
Really?
He can't stop talking about what a hard worker, what a great performer, and just what a good person you are. And he, very, very complimentary.
Wow, what a sweetheart. That's,
He is a sweetheart. I mean, my goodness, but yeah.
That's a lovely thing to hear. He was, he did make it really easy. I mean, it's not, like I said, it is not the easiest language to learn, but yeah, no, he was incredibly helpful, incredibly supportive. So I feel like there's a little bromance going on right now.
Oh, there may be very well.
Absolutely. It's not about Jamie and Claire anymore. It's all about Jake.
Lovely. Well, I'm glad we were able to help facilitate that.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
Or at least bring it to the international community. So speaking of, I could say Outlander, yes, but specifically episode 104, The Gathering.
Sure.
Speaking of that and your experience, what was it like being on set? What was your favorite part of the experience? Were there some challenges, things that surprised you?
I always like being on set. I've not had the largest amount of experience with it. So obviously when I am there, it's always, it's a wonderful place to be because you do feel kind of like, you feel like you're part of something. And I think that's what's a really nice thing to be part of. You know, it's always a bit chaotic, you know, and there's always people kind of getting a bit stressed and, you know, with lots of kind of different conflicting ideas. And there's always, you know, like the sound guy, he's got his boom and he's like, I need to hide in the corner somewhere because the camera's going to pan there and you know what I'm going to do. So it's always a little bit kind of lots of that kind of thing. But it was great because everybody was on it, you know, everybody kind of was professional and that makes a massive difference as well. And Catriona was lovely, you know, we had a bit of a chat, you know, in between takes and everything. And she was really sweet, you know, really lovely. And I think my favorite part of it was getting my wig on. Definitely. That wig, I was like, I am wearing this wig. This is brilliant. It was amazing. I mean, like, because I think I got there about, 6 o'clock in the morning and, you know, they get you into the kilt first and then they get into hair and makeup. And I was in the hair and makeup for about 45 minutes because obviously they've got to make my face all dirty and my hair the way it is. And yeah, that wig, I was like, I am wearing this wig, I tell you. But it was great. I mean, it's always, like I said, it can be a bit chaotic, but I mean, and then long days as well. I think there's always a bit of glamour that comes with TV and film when you actually see the finished product. I think once you're actually on set, it's waiting around, but I mean, it's just what you have to do, you know? So, but yeah, I think that whole sense of being part of a professional outfit with people that are really well respected and kind of watching the director. I mean, I remember watching Brian Kelly, who directed The Gathering, just, you know, talking to different people. And it wasn't just about his direction. It was about how he communicated with different people and just held the whole thing together. And I think that sometimes is really tricky because if you get somebody who's, you know, like tired of sitting around for an hour and a half not being used and the lighting guy can't quite get this right or, you know, the sound guy is in the wrong place, it takes a lot to kind of control and, you know, keep everybody's spirits up, particularly when you're shooting one scene for about, whatever it was, 8 or 9 hours, which is not far off how long we spent filming that scene in the hallway. So it's, but yeah, learning from lots of different people and just finding out about people, you know, like how the lighting works and how the sound works and just being interested in that kind of thing just made the day much more bearable, I think, for me, you know.
There's like a common misconception with filming when you work in TV and film is that everyone only sees the finished product and they don't understand that to get to the finished product, you need like 100 things doing the right thing at the right time.
Exactly.
So it's a lot of like choreography of the sound, of the camera, of the actors. It's not just the actors standing there and doing their performance.
Yeah.
So there's a lot going on.
I completely agree. And that's what, earlier when I was mentioning, you know, like leaving drama school, you are like a bit like a rabbit in the headlights because you do see it and you're like, wow, you know, that film was so cool and, you know, working with that actor and that actress and that director, it must have just been wicked. And you're like, yeah, it is. But, you know, like I said, I got there about 6 or 6.30 and was in hair and makeup for about 45 minutes, maybe an hour. And then you're sent closer to the set, but not actually on the set, cause not quite ready for you. And you're there for about an hour maybe. And then you're on the set and you're not needed straight away because they just need you on set just to be there. And then you say hello to the director and and then you kind of do your scene, and then like, right, okay, let's do it again, and blah blah blah, and then you change angles, and then you've got to work out where the sound guy goes, and the first AD, you know, where are they going to be, and you know, the guys behind the camera, you know, where are they going to go, how are they going to move there, because that wall is just that little bit too much in the way, and that's going to knock me as I pan past. So, you know, there's just so many things, and like I said, that scene lasted probably, what, I mean, no more than about 5 minutes, probably not even that. You know, I mean, on the day, you're doing it from like 9 o'clock in the morning until about, I mean, I think I left at about 5 or 6, and, you know, it's like, it's wonderful at the end. Because, like, you know, now we've got it on Amazon Prime Instant. Like, it's great, but doing it, it's like, oh, that must have been brilliant. And I'm like, yeah.
You're like, I don't want to say no because it was awesome, but it was not Rosebud.
Well, people think it's just fun, and it is fun, but it's also, it is work.
Exactly, I mean, yeah. And you don't want to be that guy who's kind of like, oh, yeah, God, it's so boring, you know what I mean? Like, you don't want to be that person, because obviously there were other actors who auditioned for the same part as me, and I got it, so you can't be too much like that. But, you know, it's they're hard days, they're long days, but I do it all over again, without question.
As you said, it's something that you've chosen and that you knew coming into it, even with the rabbit of the headlights.
Yeah.
You knew what you knew, or you knew you thought you knew something when you first began, but then as you get more experience, you actually find out what it really is behind the scenes and gain more experience. But yeah, it's something that you can't imagine doing anything else.
Nothing else, nothing else. I was chatting to, I met up with a producer a couple of days ago, and I was chatting to him about the same thing. And I just said, I was thinking about this, you know, because it gets to the point where you might not have worked for a time. And my other half, James, he runs his own company and does fairly well from it. And he's, you know, he's like, where should we go on holiday this year? And should we take a weekend off here and there? And I just kind of think, but I can't, you know, because of everything. And you do kind of get to the point where you're like, should I be doing something else? Should I be getting a regular job, you know, get paid every week, work Monday to Friday, have the weekend off, take nice holidays, and thinking maybe I could do this and maybe I can do that, but then I'd have to train. And I have literally gone through as many kind of solutions as possible to get there, because I am I try to be quite pragmatic about things, but there is just nothing. There's nothing that I can possibly think of that would make me probably as happy, you know. And like I said, it's just, it's the life we choose when we're now fully aware of how it is, you know.
So you've talked about Jake the actor, Jake the child actor, as King Herod coming up through as far as Outlander.
Sure.
What about Jake the non-actor? Or what is your, when you're not in front of the camera, or when you're not on stage, or not rehearsing, what do you like to do? What, tell us a little bit about yourself and your hobbies, etc.
God, I guess. I mean, I've been with my. I don't know what.
He's like, I have no hobbies. I'm so boring.
So I've been with my partner James now for coming up 10 years.
Congratulations!
Thank you very much. Thank you very much indeed. Traveling and experience is probably the thing that I found myself doing much more of recently, and found myself asking for, you know, like if it was for Christmas or birthdays and that kind of stuff. Experiences is something that I've actually found myself becoming more and more interested in. Like last June, for instance, I climbed Mount Kilimanjaro in Tanzania. I did that for an autistic charity based up in North London. To meet new people, I like to travel, experience new things. I really am into food. You know, I like trying new different kinds of restaurants and that kind of stuff, and using, you know, websites to kind of recommend which restaurants to go to and just all that. I think it is this experience. Like, yeah, I'm trying to make myself sound as cool and clear as possible I mean, a huge, huge foodie, very much into travel, you know, getting together with my friends at the weekends. I found myself going to the theatre, actually, in film and cinemas, you know, much more now. And it's funny, actually, because I think people kind of assume that you should be doing that, or you will be doing that anyway, being an actor, but it's not always the case. But fairly recently, I found myself, you know, being more interested in seeing different theatre, and seeing theatre that's kind of like, you know, nourishing and kind of challenging and asks important questions based on whatever. But yeah, and I'm also planning to get married this year to James, so that's taken up a little bit of time and organisation.
Oh, sure. Just a few minutes.
Just a little. You know, we've got a spare weekend, so we thought, let's just put that in.
Yeah. How exciting. Well, that's awesome. Congratulations again. That's so cool.
Well, you better not book a gig on the date.
That's going to be so awkward. Sorry, not to get married that weekend, but that would be awkward.
I was going to go on my honeemoon. But...
yeah, exactly.
Sorry, James.
Just need to cut it short. Awkward.
Right. I'm going to go back.
So you mentioned that you have been or are pragmatic about thinking, okay, well, literally, is there anything else I can do to, you know, have a more regular schedule or to take those vacations or holidays? And it just comes back to know this is you and this is what you love and this is your passion.
Yeah.
And you're pursuing your passion, which Summer and I both always say is one of the most important things for anyone. However, even though you're not, you've done that, you've been through that, you're sticking to what you're doing. When you don't, or when you are in between jobs or are still waiting for that next call for the audition or for the next job, what do you like to do? Do you work in any other industry?
Yeah, so I run my own company. It's a concierge company based in London. And I was I started it 2009. I was working in the West End on the Alan Bennett play that I mentioned. I was doing that and I didn't want to go back to the job I was doing, which I was working at the Old Vic Theatre, actually, just on behind the bar. And I didn't want to go back to that because I kind of felt like it's my first time in the West End. I kind of want to feel like I'm moving forward in as many ways as I possibly can in my life. And literally just stepped out the shower one day and it came to me and I was like, actually, I could do that, actually. You know, like helping people. I like to help people. I like to meet people, you know. And I thought, you know, I'm quite energetic. I'm quite pragmatic. I'm quite organized with certain things. So I've had lots of kind of jobs where people say, you know, I need someone to come out to clean my house, to plan my daughter's third birthday party. You know, I need someone to drive down to IKEA and pick up some furniture for me and then bring it back and build it. And, you know, like I need someone to, you know, declutter and reorganize my cellar and my attic and everything. So from that perspective, I kind of thought, you know, I like doing that kind of thing. And I'm lucky enough to be in an area of London where people still need that kind of a service. So I started doing that in 2009 and the job list just grew and grew pretty much. And I've done some very weird jobs for people, without question. But that kind of keeps me busy in between jobs. So that's my thing. That's my job, what I do in between.
So are you actually doing these things or are you finding people to do these things?
Both.
Like, are you the middleman or are you the guy who's going in and decluttering their attic?
Both. So, I mean, if I'm working, then obviously I can't do it. But if I know, if somebody asks me, one of my clients asks me, then I can always say, well, you know, I have a massive pool of out of work actors who I know. So I just said, you know, as long as they're willing to do it, if they're able to do it, and I know them well enough, you know, I never kind of just get any random to do it because obviously I don't want that kind of thing. As long as it's within their skill set, within their remit, then, and they can be on time and friendly and, you know, helpful, then I can get them to do it. But 9 times out of 10, it is usually me.
Okay, so Outlander fans, if you're looking, if you want to have an Outlander actor come and clear out the clutter in your attic and you live near and around London,
yeah, exactly.
Look up Jake Ferretti.
Your toilet, I am there. I am there.
Aww.
But we must
prefer to see you on screen or on stage.
Thank you.
I don't know. Now I kind of want him plunging my toilet.
So the company is called House Elf. If there are any Outlander fans out there in the London area, I'm your guy.
That's awesome. Actually, you know, when you said, first I thought, what a great, before you mentioned anything about any other actors, right, and you just mentioned your company, I thought, what a great idea, right, whether it's you, just you, or anyone else included in that company, or in the job sphere, it's so great, it is something that, obviously, your company, so you work around your own schedule, so you can, and I'm saying this with love, you can drop it, or schedule your, not drop the company, but schedule yourself, your stuff, and your clients around your acting jobs.
Absolutely.
But then you mentioned your clients and your other acting friends. And I think that's one of the best solutions I've ever heard to not only help yourself. And I mean, you truly are performing a service for people that is needed. I mean, if there were not need, you would not have a job in that sphere either. So you're not only helping out others, you're helping out yourself, and you're helping out your friends who are fellow actors. I mean, that's I mean, that's almost like a charity.
I'm expecting a call from David Cameron any day.
There you go. No, that's brilliant. Yeah. I mean, because you are. Everyone is getting helped.
Absolutely. And it just makes things really easy. Like, I can be in control of what I'm doing now so much easier. And if something were to come up, you know, then I can always say, well, listen, do you mind us rescheduling during this? Or I found somebody else to kind of do it for you. And, you know, there's never really an issue. There's never really a problem. But the one thing I have found is that it does tend to be a lack of in London, a service that's kind of very personable, very friendly, very approachable, but still providing a really helpful service. Do you know what I mean? Like, and, you know, because I've had people phone me and say, you know, I just need you for an hour or two because I've got loads of kitchen tiles that I don't use anymore. They're downstairs in my cellar and I just need them taken upstairs to my attic. So it's just, you know, finding somebody who can do that really random, odd job that you can't do yourself for whatever reason. And, you know, you can't ask a builder to do it because it's not within their remit. You know, you can't ask a friend to do it because they're not, may not be available. You can't do it because you've either got a child or two and, you know, it's just not possible for you to do it. So, you know, being able to do that, make money and help my friends out as well has been an enormous help over the past couple of years.
I have a feeling you're going to need to invest in a kilt. And you're going to have people who are contacting you saying, I want you to come to my house, kilt. And then I want you to recreate the hallway scene in my hallway.
Weirdest job. One of the weirdest jobs ever. But hey, you know, I'm not ruling it out. That's what I'm saying.
I just can't get over that. I think that's like one of the best ideas for, I mean, I'm sorry I'm stuck on that. I think it's one of the best ideas for a company I've ever heard.
She's been taking notes furiously for the last like 5 minutes. She's like, how do I start this?
No, yeah, I mean, there may be some legs in that. I'm not ruling it out. I'm not, yeah.
Do you? I'm curious because you used an example, and I don't know if it was fictitious or actually something someone in your company has done, but you mentioned the example of like moving tiles from a basement to the attic or something like that. In something like that where you do have a worker, whether it's yourself or a subcontractor that is able to, you know, you want someone who's physically fit enough to do it and not injure themselves or, you know, who can handle it. But even the fittest person can injure themselves. Do you have to have some kind of liability insurance or do you have to be bonded, licensed?
Yeah, so we have insurance and that covers the elves that work for me. It also covers,
I love it.
There are lots of other things that it covers as well. And yeah, because obviously I'm going to be a job like that. I want my staff to be as safe as possible. But also conversely, you know, I don't want my clients to be injured. I don't want their properties to be damaged, you know, and I need to know that I can send somebody that knows how to do the job. And if something were to go wrong for whatever reason, it could be any of a million things, everybody's protected, you know, me, my person and the client as well. So it works. We've never had an issue at all. So, you know, but it's one of those things. It's better to be safer than sorry, you know?
Always, always, always.
Absolutely.
So what's the weirdest job you've ever had?
if you can share or if you want to share that.
Right. Okay, so...
He's going to tell us.
This is going to happen. I'm not going to mention names.
No.
So I was away. I was in Georgia, I think it was. I was in Atlanta, and this lady phoned me, really lovely lady. She was like, hi, I've got these two rooms in the top of my house, and my children, my son and my daughter, they're at university. And I just wanted to know if you can kind of clear out boxes and rooms and all that kind of stuff. Now, when she said it, I thought she just meant decluttering, which is something that I've done loads. And it was just something that naturally came into my head. And I was like, yeah, sure. You know, we come around with the van and clear out the boxes. And if there's stuff you want us to take to charity or to the tip, then we can do that. And everything else that's left, we can reorganize. She was like, oh, God, that's brilliant. Thank you. So I was like, yeah, sure. So I get around there and... Now, what she suggested was that her children were at university, and there was an element of truth in that. So I get there expecting just to clear out a room, like she says. So I get there, and she's like, oh, Jake, hello, darling. Listen, so thank you so much for coming. This is my son. I can't remember what his name was. This is my son, let's say Paul for now. And I was like, hi. I'm sorry, I thought you were at university, your mum said. He's like, yeah, I was at university. I'm back for a month or two. I was like, okay, cool. So basically, we go upstairs, and he follows me as well, along with his mum. And I'm still trying to work out exactly what's happening. So we get upstairs and she said, right, Jake, well, I think you can see what's going on here. His room is a total mess. And I've asked him repeatedly, time and time again, to clean his room. But I feel I just need somebody to bring, to come here with a higher standard than my son. And he's standing right in front of her and me. And I'm like, okay, she wanted me to clean his bedroom with him.
Oh,
my God. The weird, so, bless him, he was lovely. But like, he's about 21, 22, completely random 30-year-old man in his bedroom, trying to put his underwear and, like, you know, picking up his clothes and, like, putting it in a bag and taking it downstairs to his mom. And, you know, there was, you know, without wanting to sound crass, there was an empty condom wrapper and, you know, there was, like, an empty bottle of gin in the corner as well. And, like, I just was, like, petrified about what I was going to find. So we spent about an hour in there and I'm like, so... What are you doing at university? You know, like, it's just like, a pair of his old pants and jeans, like sticking them in a bag. I'm like, this is the worst. So then I go and get her and I'm like, you know, is this okay? You know, is this what you're kind of thinking of? And she was like, oh God, it's so much better. But, you know, we really need to kind of get into the cracks and, you know, all here, it just doesn't have the highest standard. And then they start arguing with each other, you know, like, oh yeah, don't worry, Jake. You know, me and my mum are always talking to each other like this, aren't we, mum? And I'm like, oh, guys, I mean, if you just want me to leave, like, I can, if you just want to sort stuff out, I don't want to get in the way. She's like, no, you're doing really well, you're doing really well. So I spent another hour in there cleaning his bedroom, which was just weird. And then his daughter, her daughter, 18 years old, comes home, and I had to do exactly the same in her bedroom as well.
Oh,
I was like,
God.
This is the way, this is mortifying, utterly, utterly mortifying. But they were both lovely, but at the same time, I was still going through, like, underwear and stuff like that that was on the floor and like bits of paper, and you know, they just couldn't be bothered because they just didn't want to do it themselves, and they didn't really want to have, they didn't have any more enthusiasm to do it when I was there. So they're like picking up some, like a folder with paper, and the daughter, she's like, oh yeah, she's like, I guess I could keep it or like throw it, I don't know what to do, I just don't know. And I'm like, come on, we're gonna get it finished, I'm gonna go home and you want me to finish, trust me, let's just get it done.
So I'm embarrassed for them. I'm embarrassed for that family.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It was utterly mortifying. 4 hours I was there. Oh. I mean, they were lovely. They were really sweet, all of them. It was just a little bit, I wasn't expecting it at all. But lovely enough.
So would you charge by the hour or by the job?
Are you asking for some help yourself? I'm not coming to the States. I mean, California is gorgeous. I've heard it's lovely, but
I'm like, because I would far. That would be expensive because I would also have to pay for your plane ticket.
Exactly.
Do I do the work myself? Is that what you say?
No. I mean, if somebody were to hire you,
yeah,
would you, do you technically or generally charge by the hour or by the job?
Sorry, by the hour. Yeah. So we do it by the hour. So we have certain price structures, you know, based on during the week and at the weekends and very early and very late. So it's we charge by the hour.
Everyone understands going into it, you know, depending on the time of day of the week, et cetera. Everyone knows going into it, it's black and white. And you're not saying, you know, a job lasts 4 hours or 3 hours, but it takes you longer, then you're out more. So, yeah, it's probably the most straightforward.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you said, you know, as long as everyone's kind of clear what how it works in the beginning, then you can't get angry, like, this is what I said it costs and everything. But it's never luckily that's never come up like that. So but it's just managing expectations and all that kind of stuff, like you said.
This has to be like the hardest left turn we've ever taken in
what were we discussing?
But probably one of the most interesting.
It's fascinating. How do we get back onto the acting?
Oh, well,
because I'm so fascinated with this job.
That may be another podcast someday. I don't know, but I find it fascinating. But I'm really interested in people who, number one, pursue their passions,
sure,
and number two, work for themselves. It's very, very inspiring.
No, I agree.
Maybe you need to start a podcast and call it like Elf Tales.
Can you imagine? Oh, you could have everything, couldn't you? Elf and safety, you know.
Yes!
Yeah.
Elf help.
Elf help, yeah. We're making it. We're starting this. We're doing that.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so
go elf yourself.
Go
elf yourself. That, I mean, that could be construed in a plethora of ways, which might not.
I know.
You know what I mean? But yeah, I mean, it's a possibility. We're going to throw it out there.
So what are some of your upcoming projects, performances you have coming up, or theater, film, anything you'd like to share with our listeners?
Sure, absolutely. So I did what's called a TV ident a couple of weeks ago. So on the end of the beginning and the end of like documentaries and soaps and all that kind of stuff, you have what are called idents. So you have, well, in the UK, I would assume you have it in the US as well. So at the beginning and the start of the commercial breaks, you have an ident for maybe a bank or a supermarket, you know, a quick tiny commercial on the start and end of every commercial break. And I did a filming for that for a bank, a big nationwide bank in the UK. So I did that. So I filmed that fairly recently. But I've just started writing my own play, actually, which I'm hoping is going to start getting workshopped sometime soon with some rehearsed readings and stuff. So that's kind of taken up a lot of my time up until now. But yeah, just lots of auditioning, lots of chats with my agents who are absolutely lovely. So that's kind of what's been happening for me fairly recently. But I'm hoping, I mean, if something were to come up again in Outlander, then I'd love to be able to go back into it, get back into those boots.
Absolutely. And you'd be welcome back here anytime.
Excellent. That would be wonderful. That would be so kind of you.
And is there anything else you'd like to share with us or our listeners?
Yes, actually, there would be. I would like to say thank you, actually. I mean, to all of the people that I've mentioned now, to particularly to you guys, thank you so much for allowing me to do this. This is really kind of you. That's really a lovely experience. But I'd also like to thank Adam, as we spoke about earlier on. But also I'd like to say a big special thank you to Simone Pereira-Hind and Suzanne Smith, who actually cast me in this in the first place. It's unexpected, but really, really flattering. So I'm very grateful to them and again, to you guys as well for allowing me to do this.
Absolutely. And as I said, it's our pleasure and our privilege, and we will have you back anytime. And you don't, I mean, obviously, if you come back to Outlander, we're going to have you back here. once in Outlander, always in Outlander. So if you have a new, seriously, tangential still counts. If you have a new thing you're doing, whether it's a new film, a new commercial, a new at anything, you're welcome to come back.
That is very
true. And even if it's not 100% Outlander related, because as I said, you're in the Outlander family now. How can people follow you and your work, contact you, and find out more about you?
I think the best way, I guess, is Twitter. I mean, I'm finding myself on it more and more these days. So yeah, at Jake Ferretti would be the easiest way to kind of keep up with me and to find out exactly what I'm doing. I guess I'm trying to think of something much cooler and easier than that, but I think that's probably going to be the way.
If they wanted to hire you as an elf, what is there a website for that?
Yeah, sure. So it's houseelf.co.uk. That's an easy way that all the emails and the phone calls and everything that comes directly through to me. So if you do need help with anything, any errands that you are not able to do yourself, then do give us a call. Houseelf.co.uk.
I have a feeling it's going to be merging into housescott.co.uk.
Oh, my goodness. Or hire a Scott. I don't know. Hire a kilt. I don't know.
I think. Quick,
grab the Twitter. make the Twitter handle before it goes away.
Brilliant, isn't it? Yeah, we should hashtag this. We could come up with a
hashtag. Yeah, exactly.
Oh my
God. Okay, well, Jake, thank you so much for coming on the show and speaking with us and spending some of your valuable time. And thank you also, even though we didn't discuss this on the show, it was before the show started, thank you so much for your cooperation and understanding with our time conflicts.
No worries at all, ladies. Thank you so much again. Thank you.
And I'm going to need you to post some brilliant wedding photos.
Oh, my goodness.
After today.
Oh, yes. I mean, oh, my goodness. Yes. And again, congratulations. We're so happy for you.
Thank you very much. That's very kind of you. And I absolutely will do that. I promise.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
No worries. Thank you, ladies.
Okay. Have a wonderful day.
You too. Bye-bye.
He was just so nice. He was great. But as you said, that was the biggest left turn.
Oh my gosh.
It was so funny, but I was so interested.
I want to find out more about this elf thing.
You mean Rent-A-Klansman? Because I know what's going to happen.
Hopefully.
Seriously. Like, the more he started talking about it, the more I was like, wait, tell me more. Wait,
yeah. We know you're an Outlander. We already talked about that. Let's get to your house elf bits.
Oh, leave his bits alone.
You know what I mean.
Do I? So again, I know we mentioned it, but if you're in the London area and are looking for somebody to come help you out around the house or run errands for you, check out the house elf.
Thank you again so much for joining us. We look forward to our next episode. Thank you to our generous audio host, audioboom.com. Our audioboom channel is www.audioboom.com/channel/OutlanderPod. Visit our website at www.outlanderpod.com. Follow us on Twitter at OutlanderPod. Find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/OutlanderPod or email us at OutlanderPod@gmail.com. That my